Today, we have a special episode all about feeding our families realistically. Stacey Billis and Megan Splon co-host Didn't I Just Feed You?, a weekly podcast that solves kitchen problems for busy family cooks. Their tips, recipes, and sane advice honed over 20 plus years of professional cooking help save listeners money, time, and overwhelm. They're pretty funny too. And they're committed to spreading hashtag food joy because life is too short to get stressed over dinner. Welcome, Stacey and Megan. Thank you so much for coming on to the Debt-Free Mom podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yay. Happy to be here.
Thanks. So I would love to hear from you guys, a little bit of your background of just how did you arrive at starting this podcast together? Was it from personal experience with your own kids? Was it a career of yours prior? How did you come to Didn't I Just Feed You?
We have what I call a meet cute. I think we're both longtime food editors. Stacey had a great YouTube channel called One Hungry Mama. She had been in the food and family space for a long time. I wrote for thekitchen.com for many years and for a while was the primary parent. So I wrote a lot about family cooking. We met through Instagram because I cooked a recipe or baked rather because it was graham crackers from Stacey's first cookbook, Make It Easy, and tagged her. And so for many years, we were just Instagram friends. And then we met in real life at a professional food writers conference. And the story goes that we had a little too much whiskey and we were commiserating about all the problems of feeding our families and then also feeling like food media really didn't speak to parents in a way that was true to their experiences. You'd get a lot of like non-parents writing easy dinner recipe roundups and it didn't work for most families. And so I was many whiskey drinks in, being like, we should start a podcast together. And Stacey did warn me. She's like, no, I'm serious. If you say we're doing this, but I didn't think that it would come to fruition. Next morning in my inbox is Stacey. She's like, so first thing we're going to have to figure out is what to call it. And Didn't I Just Feed You is an expression I think any mom can relate to. Like, you feel like you're constantly feeding them. And that they're constantly asking for more snacks, more food, et cetera.
Yeah, it's so exhausting.
It is. And it's something that it's like this double whammy of I have to do it constantly and it's not predictable. It's like you ate this yesterday and now you hate it. And so I have to constantly be guessing. And it's not like you're asking once a day. It's like you're asking seven times a day. And so the level of exhaustion and overwhelm is very high when it comes to kids and food.
Yeah. And part of what we wanted to really reveal that it's very difficult to do when you're writing a cookbook or articles for magazines, which both of us have done a million times over, is just it's hard for us, too. We're literally food professionals. People come to us to develop the recipes that you find in the magazines. And even we're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I need to feed you tonight. Like, I'm exhausted. I'm tired. Like, I didn't make a meal plan. You're going to make a fuss. And that's so annoying. And I can't deal. Like, all of those emotions are reality for all of us. Mm-hmm. And so on Didn't I Just Feed You, we bring that to bear. Like, it was important to us to have a very open and honest conversation in a way that made us feel a little bit professionally vulnerable at first. Mm-hmm. But it's just real life. And like, that's the way we felt like we could be most of service to parents.
Yeah, I think that is such a breath of fresh air to feel because for moms who aren't in the food space and that isn't what their career is, I'm sure they would look at cookbooks or blogs and just think, oh, they're so good at it. It comes so naturally to them.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it does. And still, it's freaking hard.
It's still a ton of work, even if you like doing that work.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it just that doesn't necessarily solve a problem for the listener, but it gives them permission to let it be hard, that it is hard for everybody. And so the fact that it feels hard to feed our kids is not an indication that we're just always going to be bad at it and not going to be able to find ways to, you know, get that food on the table, that it's normal.
Yeah, I think you're hitting the nail on the head. It normalizes it in a way that allows us to start to give ourselves permission slips, in a way that allows us to forgive ourselves when we mess up or we order takeout or we get the fast food or we just can't and it's cereal for dinner. Like, these things happen to all of us because that's the reality of family life for so many Americans in particular.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Normalizing, that's important.
And also getting other home cooks to know what kind of cook they are and what kind of season that they are, so that they're not like scrolling on Instagram being like, oh, well, so-and-so is making this beautiful meal every night for their family, when that's not even what they care about. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe their priority is getting out to play with their kids after dinner. And so then dinner needs to be really quick and easy and just hit a number of nutrient mm-hmm. checklists for them.
Yeah. I remember once clicking on a Pinterest pin that was like 10 dinners for families with little kids. And the very first meal it had was some sort of mac and cheese dish that had frozen peas mixed into it. And I was mm-hmm. just like, my child would not touch that yeah. with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
And so you just become disillusioned. You're kind of just like, okay, well, I guess my kid is just way pickier than normal because somebody's kids are eating that. And my kid is just, you know, on the beige and yellow kind of diet, right?
Yeah. I think that's what's been so exciting. Both Megan and I have talked about how the podcast is one of our most rewarding projects professionally. Because the nature of being able to converse and kind of hash it out with the two of us, with kids at different ages and stages. And then also, we have a community that we love that's part of Didn't I Just Feed You? If you go to didntijustfeedyou.com/community, you can see it there. There's a free community and listeners boards. But it's so important to get all different perspectives because we're all dealing with different seasons of life, different budgets, different interests in food and cooking and diets. So this kind of open conversation around food that isn't just a one-way discussion from the New York Times or Bon Appetit to you, yeah. from these food professionals to you, really makes such a difference. It has made such a difference in the lives of our followers and listeners. It's also made such a difference to us, you know, because we've been doing it for 5 or 6 years now. So even our kids, we've gone through different stages as we've recorded the podcast.
Yeah. So Megan, you said just briefly something about figuring out what kind of cook they are. Are there different kinds that you've identified? A home cook who like loves to do it for fun versus somebody who just wants to get food on the table? Do you have off the top of your head, what are a few of the ways that someone might identify as this type of home cook?
You know, what's so interesting is there really is not one archetype or even a series of archetypes. Many of us find ourselves in different buckets at one time. Like right now, I have a preteen who is also very picky, something I haven't dealt with since I had toddlers. And then I have one very adventurous 9-year-old who wants to have sushi and smoked salmon and Brussels sprouts every night. And my daughter would not touch any of those things. Mm-hmm. And I am a work from home mom, but my husband travels. And when he is gone for work, he is like gone mm-hmm. for weeks at a time. So just using myself as an example, I fall into all these different categories. Like many parents are facing so many challenges. And Stacey is going before me because her kids are a little bit older than mine are. But she's entered a whole different world where her boys can also feed themselves, where she's not even able to supervise what they're eating and if they're getting maybe all the things that she would want them to.
Yeah, I think so much of knowing the cook you are is not just introspection, because I don't think we are one kind of cook, like Megan is saying, at any given point in time. I think it's about being honest about your circumstances, the season of parenting you're in, and what you have bandwidth for. Because I've always been a very adventurous cook who liked to do everything from scratch. And even when my kids were toddlers, I still felt like I was that kind of cook deep in my heart. In fact, I felt resentful that my life didn't allow me to accommodate that because it brought me joy. So when we say figure out the kind of cook you are, it's really about being honest about the bandwidth and the circumstances. Like, you'll get back to that. I did. I have a 14-year-old and a 17-year-old. I can do cooking projects that bring me joy, and I can have dinner parties again in a way that I felt too overwhelmed to do. But, you know, there were seasons of life where I had to be like, okay, this one's picky. Dad is working out of the house and traveling a lot. This is the way dinner has to look yeah. for a while. And trusting that it'll change. People get very scared because they're like, oh God, it's going to be this way forever. we're going to always like eat just bland white foods and I'm going to just eat the dregs of the mac and cheese. It's not going to be that way forever.
Yeah.
I promise.
Yeah. So for somebody who is listening, who maybe has one or two really littles, so they're at the beginning, they're just learning how to feed those little kids and realizing that they each have very different opinions that not only change between children, but change day to day. What are some of those things that they could maybe focus on as the priorities to let the other stuff go when it comes to getting food on the table in a way that isn't going to overwhelm them?
Yeah, we talk about this idea that comes up when you're first feeding babies, right? This idea of like formula versus breast that doesn't really exist, because as long as your baby is fed, you are doing a good job. And Stacey mentioned the listeners community. One of the things that comes out of it is that most of the people we talk to, most of the people who come to us for help are actually doing it right all along, and they just need reassurance of that. So that's where I would start, is saying that you're probably doing a good job already if your kids are getting fed when they are hungry. And that doesn't have to look like 3 meals a day, like the June Cleaver fully set meals, everyone eats together. In fact, we recently had an episode where we talked about how to make multiple dinner times work. And I came at it from this idea of like, oh, well, it's mostly for sports season or when you have older kids who like have jobs and they're not home. And Stacey was like, but don't you remember when you had little toddlers? And actually it was way easier to cook them one meal and then have the meal that you really wanted to eat later with your partner. I was like, oh yeah, that is right. And there are really great strategies within that where you could make a meal the night before for you and your partner that also serves as leftovers to feed your younger kids, so you're not burning out on cooking. But I think just coming at this angle of like, fed is best, and it doesn't have to look like Pinterest mm-hmm. or food blogs or magazines are making it look.
This is a very "didn't I just feed you" thing to do, where one of us sets things up with permission slips and giving yourself the credit that you deserve that you're maybe not giving yourself and you should, and then getting down to some brass tacks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Megan queued us up. But for someone who's really looking for some, like when the rubber hits the road, what are the things I need mm-hmm. to do? Help me out, ladies. We're huge proponents of meal planning. Mm-hmm. So listen, meal planning is a real trigger subject. And for the first 4 years of Didn't I Just Feed You, we were like, if you're a meal planner, do this. And if not, like, don't worry. Like, we get it. Like, it hasn't worked for a lot of you. And we were thinking about a product that we wanted to put out into the world that we thought would be highly impactful on our audience. And we brainstormed so many things, and we came back to meal planning over and over and over. And so we were like, what if we can figure out how to make anybody a meal planner? Like, I don't care if you have ADHD. I don't care if it failed for you. I don't care if you've never planned a single thing in your whole life. Like, we can make it work. And we came up with our self-guided audio course called Meal Planning for Everyone. And it was really enlightening even for us to put everything we know about meal planning down. All this to say, everybody's a meal planner, because even if you're that, like, you know, scattered home cook who at 6 o'clock gets in front of the fridge and is like, oh, crap, like I have to figure out dinner. In that moment, you are meal planning. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, it's 2 minutes before you start cooking. It doesn't feel like planning, but you are a meal planner. So, like, thinking about what skills you're employing in that moment and pulling back and figuring out, like, what of this can I do a little bit more in advance? Because I think the thing about picky eating is figuring out that Venn diagram. Mm-hmm. Figuring out what foods can you cook that they'll like, that maybe can be plain for them, but then zhuzhed up for you, or utilized in a slightly different way that doesn't take another full hour of cooking mm-hmm. so that you have a dinner that's kind of satisfying to you and you don't feel like, well, crap, I don't want to cook for an hour and be stuck with like plain bland mm-hmm. chicken again and plain rice. So meal planning is really a nice way to figure those meals out. So that's one thing I would say. Cooking once and eating twice is another thing that we talk about a lot. Where, you know, if you're going to cook rice, anything that can be cooked in bulk, chicken breasts, rice, grains, beans, you know, cook them in bulk. double the recipe and then, you know, use it in all different ways because you're becoming really efficient with your time and you're building in some flexibility without, again, starting from scratch and doing one meal for the kids that takes you 40 minutes and then another meal for yourself that takes you 40 minutes. Like, those are two really big ones for me.
Yeah. I found myself in retrospectively looking back at the meals that I was commonly making for the family and realized I made almost nothing that resembled soup or casserole because I couldn't adjust them. Like, I couldn't, you know, remove the onions after the fact or whatever it was. That it was a lot that my default had accidentally become meals that were more about these different building blocks that could be pieced together however people wanted it. And it wasn't something I did on purpose, but I think it was just the function of feeding so many different preferences was like, well, if I can just make taco meat, people can put it into whatever vessel they want to put it into or, you know, put whatever on top they want to. Where before, I think I was pre-kids, like you said, my husband and I were very adventurous eaters. So I was trying all kinds of things. And then that shift into feeding little kids who had strong opinions was like, okay, none of the meals that I used to make work. What am I supposed to do? And so now it's kind of fun for me to look back. My oldest is almost 9. And so now to look back on these years of, wow, like over time, just the how frequently I had to make dinner made me shift into this pattern of what worked well to feed a variety of people. And that building block idea is something that I've kind of just stuck with of I can make it super spicy for myself and put it in a tortilla and my kids can have the blandest taco I've ever seen and we're all happy, right?
Totally. Yeah, thinking about it in terms of building blocks. And then we're really, really big proponents of making sure that if you've invested any amount of time in cooking, that you should, you know, not every night, but you should really enjoy it too because the longer you go where you're not enjoying your meal and your food, the less motivating cooking becomes, and then you just start like giving in and giving up, and it becomes really hard to get back on track. So thinking about flavor bombs is something we talk about, hot sauces. You also have to fit into your budget, I know, and these ingredients can be expensive and hard to invest in and then use up completely. So you have to be wise about them, but a well-placed hot sauce that you love that's just for you, or a little like savory sprinkle that maybe you put together with some toasted sesame seeds and some dried herbs and spices that you sprinkle on everything really goes a long way.
Yeah. My current favorite is white truffle oil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Such a good one.
Yeah.
And then you know that if dinner's satisfying because you can put your maybe a little bit more spendy ingredient on it, you're less likely to burn out on cooking and doing things like takeout and meal kits that end up being more expensive if budget is like a really big consideration. But going back to picky eating, when you start to just put the chicken nuggets in front of them every night, which no shade to chicken nuggets. We serve chicken nuggets to each of our families on the regular, keep them stocked in our freezer. But then you risk losing out on the exposure to new foods to your kids. And it gets harder and harder to introduce new things to them.
Yeah.
And have variety in their diet. Mm-hmm. So even if you're doing building block dinners, they're seeing you enjoy pickled red onions on your taco bowl. And that gives them curiosity about that ingredient and how it might taste and counts towards exposure if it's only on the table and they didn't even touch it.
I would love to talk about this exposure thing too, because as a resident mother of older kids, it's very funny. Isaac is my 17-year-old, and he was a very adventurous eater, and he was very easy to feed. In fact, imagine the audacity of a food writer cookbook author who has her first baby who eats everything. I just thought I had done such a wonderful job. I was so proud of myself, you know, and of course, then the second one comes along and whatever. Ha ha, yeah. Joke's on me. But, you know, Isaac is 17 now, and we talk a lot about this on the podcast. He loves fast food to the point where he eats so much of it. I live in New York City, so he's very independent, and he can leave school for lunch. So he gets a little stipend, and he feeds himself a lot of the time. He's also an athlete, so he's often months at a time, like, from school to practice and, like, feeding himself in between. To the point where I really feel like he's influenced what he craves mm-hmm. because he eats so much food that is designed to be highly craveable. And in his way, he's become selective. So like all this work and this pressure that we put on ourselves, not have picky eaters, like it's, yeah, no, great. Like, absolutely. We should be exposing them. And nutrition is important. And, you know, healthy foods, healthy bodies. I get it. But like, also, like, let's be real that there's only so much control we have. And to beat ourselves up over it is such a waste of our time. On the flip side, my husband was such a picky eater growing up that they had to give him enriched pasta because they were worried about his nutrition. One brand of tomato sauce and carrot sticks were the only vegetable he would eat. And now the man is absolutely hands down the most adventurous eater I've ever met. Like, we love to travel. We were recently in Japan and I'm an adventurous eater. Like, there were things he was eating that I was like, no. He's like, what? Really? Okay, let's do it. I'm going to do it. So, you know, there's only so much control we really have. And to get all wrapped up in it is really, I think I now, and I'm just realizing it, I know you can give advice to moms with younger kids and it, you know, sometimes it can feel like it's not understanding where they are in the thick of it. And I remember those moments, but like maybe it will help someone to hear that like your kid might become picky at 17.
It's all a long game. It really is. Yeah. Whether they're picky at 2 or 12, like mine, or at 17,
yeah,
they're going to go through many stages and phases. And so knowing that ultimately the goal isn't to get kids who like love and are obsessed with kale. It's to have kids who, one, know how to feed themselves. So you can give Isaac a hard time because he loves fast food. But he's feeding himself. He's taking one thing off of your to-do list a couple 100%. Times a day. And to have a healthy relationship to food. Really, that's the ultimate goal. And we, as adults, we have preferences. So it kind of makes sense that kids also have preferences. They aren't allowed to not like things.
Yeah. I think that one of my best, like, weight off my shoulders was when I realized that sometimes what we want to be solved by some sort of trick or hack is sometimes just solved by time. That like just, you know, putting that piece of broccoli on his plate and watching him not touch it for 4 years, that one day he really might just go ahead and eat it out of the blue. And you kind of look at it. I have so many moments in my head where my husband and I make eye contact, like, don't move. Don't say anything. He just ate the broccoli.
Yeah. Don't overreact.
Right.
No reaction.
Like, totally neutral. Like, oh, wow. You know, and it is true that it's like, if I just would have known that at the beginning, I think I would have been less hard on myself. It's like, if they eat it, then we did a good job. And if they don't eat it, then we did a terrible job. And if we then applied that same thing to ourselves, we realize, oh, well, like, I don't like certain things that a lot of other adults like, and we're not taking it as an indication that I'm doing something wrong or that they're doing something right. It's just a preference. But yeah, that was something that took me quite a while to learn, was that sometimes it just takes time. And then other times they might never like broccoli, and that's okay. There's a lot of adults that don't like broccoli.
100%. You know, I do want to acknowledge that this whole idea of exposure also can feel like it costs money. And that's hard for some people. So, you know, my husband had parents who were very much able to expose him, but just weren't invested. It was a different time. And they were like, whatever, like, you won't eat anything. We'll just buy the enriched pasta. And it was very much indulged, feels like it has a judgment to it. And I don't mean that, but it was very much indulged. And he came out of it too. So if it feels like exposure cost too much, or you're throwing food away, or you just can't buy that piece of, I don't know, dragon fruit that costs a lot just to like give it a different texture and color. Like, maybe they'll eat it, maybe they won't. You know, we get that too. And just build on what you have already in your pantry or something that you like. It doesn't have to be, it's not like particular ingredients that you need to check off the I did it, my kid likes it list.
Right. And yeah, sometimes it can just be, like we said, if we're making our version of dinner fancy, just letting them see that, oh, that sauce can go on a taco and someone can like it. And then they, you know, just have that in their mind over time. It doesn't have to be some, I don't think I would try a bite of dragon fruit if I didn't know what it was, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that is really helpful, I think. And I hope, like you said, those permission slips, I hope moms who are just like, this is so much for me. And also if they're feeling like it's their fault, that they hear that permission slip of like, sometimes it's just like luck of the draw with the kid you get. And that's just how they are.
Totally.
And it doesn't matter what you do in order to influence that. So if we think about meal planning, then we talked about some of those building block meals. Are there some go-tos that you have that are, you know, if you're trying to become a meal planner and you haven't been a meal planner before and you're conscious of these different preferences inside your family, are there things that you say like, hey, these tend to be easier types of meals to try out first? Or what approach do you recommend someone taking in order for them to figure out a list of meals that will work well for their budget and capacity?
So this is all, like, spoiler, it's all laid out in Meal Planning for Everyone, our audio course. So if you are really ready to tackle it and create a meal planning system that works for you and your family, it really is a great resource. But I think people get this idea that meal planning is all or nothing. Like, I have to plan a whole month at a time and I have to do this bulk shop and every Sunday I have to prep. And it is very much not that. Even if you plan 3 dinners for the week ahead and maybe use grocery delivery to just make it even easier on yourself, get just the ingredients for that, you've already relieved stress around feeding your family, and that will make dinner time more enjoyable for you. It'll make cooking more enjoyable. One of the things we talk about in Meal Planning for Everyone is really like making a list of the things that you already know work for your family.
Yeah.
And rotating through them. Like, you don't need to meal plan a whole month with every night being a different dinner. That it doesn't make sense from a budget standpoint, from your energy standpoint. And kids like things that are reliable and predictable. I know this meal, I know how it tastes, and I'm more likely to try new components of it if I already know that I like some of it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a huge part of turning meal planning into a sustainable habit is making sure that it doesn't take too much time or too much effort, because that's when habits are like, oh, this is too hard, or like, I can't do that. So we actually recommend pulling out a timer, no joke. Like, meal planning should never take more than 10 minutes. Now, you may have to work your way up to that, but that gives you a sense of like what the goal is and where you're trying to get yourself. That can mean using one recipe source for your meal plan for the week and not trying to like go down the recipe rabbit hole, which is what we call it. So just pick one cookbook, like something that's contained, go to one website and cook like only from that site or that book that week. I think that's really important. Putting on that timer and seeing how long it takes, keeping track of what works for your family, like Megan said, and then going back and filling that in. If you have slightly older kids, asking your kids, and I think this goes even for kids, I'm not talking just teenagers, 9-year-old, 6-year-old. I think if you can slot in one or two meals that your kid is going to be excited about, one, by asking them, you have just offset some of the thinking. So I have 2 teenagers and I'm partnered, my husband. I send out a text, 3 ideas, that's 3 meals already. I think of 2 more, I've got 5 meals on my meal plan, done. And usually they ask for repeats. Ask your little kid for something. If they say mac and cheese, just give it to them. Think about how you can zhuzh it up for yourself, because them knowing that something that they're looking forward to is coming up is so helpful and empowering to them. If they're having a meltdown because what you put in front of them tonight, they're like, what? I hate peas. I can't deal with peas. Like, I'm really sorry. Peas are something that I like. You can feel free to pick them out. Tomorrow we're having what you chose. It starts a conversation, which moves you away from battles, which is part of what's so overwhelming and exhausting. But I think those are some key practical meal planning tips that can just get you into the habit.
Yeah.
But those meal blocks too, ground beef. My kid likes ground beef. And then retroactively going to that one cookbook you chose to meal plan this week, go to the index, ground beef. Here are three recipes I can cook with ground beef, and just kind of figuring out, okay, I'll crumble it up and just put salt and pepper. I'll take some out.
Yep.
Great. I'm going to serve that on rice to my kid and then continue the recipe as written.
Yeah.
If you're not paid once a month, why are you budgeting that way? A monthly budget ignores the fact that sometimes your expenses are due before the next paycheck is available. A pay period budget is built around your unique pay schedules so that your money doesn't feel like a mess. Create an accurate, realistic plan for getting the most out of each paycheck. Get started budgeting by pay period today with the best-selling budget template and mini course from me, Debt-Free Mom. It's available for just $9 at debtfreemom.co/template. I spent years feeling frustrated that my money wasn't working the way it should. It wasn't until I discovered the magic of budgeting by pay period rather than by month that my money started to feel stable. Pay Period Budget Academy is my signature budgeting course that helps hundreds of women take control of their home finances. Join today at debtfreemom.co/PBA and use the code podcast at checkout to get 20% off your membership.
I find myself, Google has so much more than we give it credit for, I think. Like, yeah. I've found myself doing a pantry scan and being like, okay, I have chicken and this vegetable and a can of this whatever soup or broth or whatever. If I just Google like recipe with these three ingredients, you know, red pepper and chicken, the amount of recipes that come up, it shocks me every time. So it's like, if I know, if I can find something that, like you said, with the ground beef, if I can find something that I know most of the people in the home will eat, and I can find a recipe off of that, then a lot of times it ends up being a much bigger hit than if I go totally out of the blue from anything we've ever had, and then I put it on a plate in front of them and it looks nothing like anything they've ever eaten. Well, yeah. I'm setting myself up for failure right there, right? With making it so unfamiliar. So that I use Google all the time for that. Of just like, these are the couple of things I have. What could I cook off of that? Which is not only a time saver and energy saver, but also a budget saver of just like, hey, I need to eat the food that's sitting here before it goes to waste. What could I do?
Totally. You also really picked up on something that I wanted to bring up, which is starting with what's familiar. When you're feeding picky eaters, I really think that's important. I really think that the conversation that food media has had around picky eaters has really centered on the ways that we can change them. That's always the narrative. And kids have so little control over their lives. Like, being able to control what you eat and say, being taken seriously when you're like, I don't like this, I think is important. Just as important as saying, like, you may not like it now, but you may change your mind. Like, that happened with me with peas. Like, I'm not saying we abandon everything we know, but some balance and making kids a part of the conversation. And the truth is, more and more research and conversation around this topic shows that kids who are extreme picky eaters, there's often a sensory challenge. There are other layers to it. And it needs to be taken seriously, and just strong-arming them into like, well, this is what's for dinner. Just like, eat it or don't or be hungry is not a tactic that's going to get everybody to where everybody wants to be. Which is like happy, healthy relationship with food and no battles at the dinner table. So, you know, if your kid loves pasta and you think they're ready for the next step, and even with your building block approach, you're like, okay, I've made all the pasta I can possibly make, try soba noodles. And they might be a total flop because soba noodles are a different color than regular pasta. But like, I would take those kind of steps where you're building on what's familiar and making sure that there's always something, like even if it's just baby carrots and ranch dip, so that, you know, that just shows a base level of respect. Like, I know tonight's not a dinner, Isaac, that you love, but me, Dad, and Oliver love it. So that's what's on the meal plan tonight. And you can feel free to make yourself ramen. I know, you know, if you have smaller kids, they can't make their own dinner, but here's something on the table for you. Because there's also value in learning that, you know what, not every table you sit at is going to have like a full meal that you accept. But here's something, you'll find a way to make do, and tomorrow night's dinner will be for you.
You use the term building blocks, and we actually have a whole episode of Didn't I Just Feed You about meal templates, and that can be really helpful. Like you mentioned taco night being a big win in your family. So can you take taco night and just swap out what the protein is or change the flavor profile? Is one way to reduce decision fatigue because you're still kind of buying similar ingredients, but also get your kids exposed to more variety and make a more satisfying meal for yourself too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have one who is that sensory picky eater that it's all about the texture for him. Like it's not,
totally.
Doesn't care about the color as much, whatever. So even when I would try different shapes of pasta, it would be like a new food because yeah. he knew that the texture was going to be different. And so it was at least like, I could tell him honestly, like, you know what the flavor of this food is. Like, it's the same brand. I would show the box of, you know, like, it's the same brand. It's just a different shape. So it's going to feel different, but it's going to taste the same. And so then, you know, he would start with just licking it for yeah. a second and be like, okay, it does feel the same. But yeah, some like you said, sometimes we don't realize there is something much deeper than just I'm trying to exert control over my parents, you know.
Totally.
For example, he will eat yogurt, but he won't eat it if it has chunks of fruit in it mm-hmm. because of that feel, that mouth feel. And so once I realized that, I was like, okay, well, I could still expand his horizons a little bit inside of what he's comfortable with. And sometimes it's just different brands. Like the brand of vanilla yogurt is going to have a slightly different texture from one to the other. And those really slight tweaks can help him to realize I'm still safe. I'm still okay
yeah.
if the container looks different or if the texture is different. And over time, he's expanded it more. He's not, you know, all the way there, but it is sometimes that we have to take much smaller steps than we think that we're going to have to in order to move them out of just like, these are my five foods and I'll never deviate kind of thing.
Yeah. I love that you use the word safe because I think we forget that food is very much tied to a feeling of safety, mm-hmm. right? It's our sustenance. Mm-hmm. It's like how humans have, you know, evolved and survive. Yeah. So it doesn't always help when you're just overwhelmed in the moment and trying to balance your budget and get dinner on the table and not deal with the meltdown when you're exhausted and ready to melt down yourself. But I do think that it can be helpful to shift your perspective towards compassion. Mm-hmm.
And that I think, unfortunately, like what you guys said, that minimizing the battles is a big goal. Unfortunately, I think I picked the wrong battles for a while when I didn't understand the sensory side of it and the safety. Because it is, like you said, because it is our sustenance and it's what's going to keep us alive, we feel almost a level of risk if we're trying something new, if we're trying something unfamiliar. So when we can recognize to have a little bit of compassion around how, you know, we know as adults that broccoli is not putting them at risk, but they are inside their own little experience, it does feel unsafe. It feels risky. And so creating those smaller steps to say, like, I know that pasta and red sauce is the only thing that you're going to eat. So we're going to just try a different shape. And so we're just, you know, try a different thing. And so they can still feel like, yeah, this is familiar. And I'm just going to take a little bit of expansion, whatever. I mean, I know for a long time, I thought I was the coolest mom ever for buying the SpongeBob mac and cheese. And he just flat out refused. He was just like, that looks different. It feels different. And that was it was a frustrating point, but it was also clarifying of like, oh, like there are actual things that are making him be like, no way, I'm not going to eat that. It's not just the character is so fun and familiar. And so that's going to make me eat it. So if people listening are kind of like having some aha moments of, oh, maybe that's why we're having some of these battles of realizing that my kid might be thinking that this is risky or too unfamiliar. And if I can add a bit of safety into their meal, maybe they would be more willing to eat it. So let's talk about little kids. Let's say when they're really young, what could we do to maybe help along a 3 to 4 year old who is just flat out refusing anything except chicken nuggets and French fries? Do you guys say, hey, just go ahead and give them the chicken nuggets and French fries until they change their mind? Or are there things that you, like the exposure, are there other things that that mom could do to at least feel better, if nothing else, about what they're putting in front of their plate? Maybe instead of just feeling overwhelmed, they're actually like concerned about the lack of nutrition, for example. Are there things that you guys would say that they could do?
My first jump, like, answer is getting consistent about everything else. So making meal time as regular as it can be, making sure the environment is as much the same as it can be. Like you're saying, someone who might be struggling with some sensory things, a 3 or 4 year old who can't articulate, like, oh, it's too loud, it's too cold, it's too hot, like making their environment as consistent as possible is a great place to start. I know Stacey's going to want to weigh in from like a child psychology background on whether you should just give in and constantly serve the chicken nuggets. My like gut and my experience has been not to do it every night, but to serve it with regularity. So you can say like, oh, we're not having chicken nuggets tonight, but we are having them tomorrow. And then always pairing a new food with a food that you know that they like. So at least they're getting full at the dinner table to some capacity.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I do think, you know, when we're speaking specific age groups, 3 to 4, I do believe that if you're a 3 to 4 year old, eats chicken nuggets every night, it's fine. Like there's so much change that you don't know until you're years beyond it. If you're worried about health, I would say don't make assumptions. Talk to your pediatrician. And, you know, I say that with a little asterisk because the truth is I very much believe in who are the experts. Let's hear the expert perspective. I'm not a pediatrician. I'm not a nutritionist. At the same time, I will just say that a lot of pediatricians, and I've heard this from pediatricians who are interested in food, and specifically who work with kids who have like Afrid, who have, you know, eating challenges, extreme picky eating, that, you know, your regular everyday pediatrician is not coming from an education where they're getting a ton of the latest up-to-date nutrition information and research. So yes, trust your pediatrician, but if they make you feel like you're doing something wrong or you have any alarm bells going off, give yourself permission to find a second opinion. Look for maybe a nutritionist. Look for a doctor who specializes in this. There are a lot of them who are available online. But yeah, I would say the one thing about just relenting every day is that you run the risk of making the problem harder to deal with. And then it can get really overwhelming. You think it'll get easier when they're older, and actually it doesn't. It's harder. But also the nutrition piece of it, like, is there anything, like, I'm actually not a huge proponent of smoothies as like a holy grail. I think they're just like anything else. They're good, but they can also be like overly packed with sugar. And it's just like everything, like pros and cons. But are there certain foods, popsicles, smoothies, purees? Does your toddler still really like purees or the squeezy pouches? Like those are some easy opportunities, low-hanging fruit to like add some nutrition. I'm also really not big on hiding foods. But at 3 and 4, like you're not talking to them as much about it. You're not like explicitly hiding it from them. If you give them something tasty and has spinach puree, just don't go crazy over it, because the truth is the amount of nutrients that you can put into a popsicle or a puree is not going to like move the needle hugely. But sometimes it just helps people feel better about it being a more overall balanced diet.
And a really wonderful thing is dinner is not the only meal that our kids eat, and home is not the only place that they're exposed to new food. So taking a little pressure off if you do have to serve them chicken nuggets 3 or 4 nights a week. Looking at the week overall, they're probably exposed to lots of other fruits and veggies, different grains, different proteins throughout the rest of the week at breakfast and lunch. You know, whether they're going to preschool and having lunch with their fellow classmates or they're at home, there's just so many more opportunities for them to have all the other nutrients that they need to outside of just dinner.
That's so good and hopefully comforting for people who are listening who are like, oh, they only eat this one kind of chicken nugget and nothing else. Like you said, Stacey, there are experts who can help, but there's also just ways that we can give ourselves permission to let it be what it is and be like, you know what, maybe 3 or 4 is not going to be the time that they're trying all the veggies, totally. But maybe 5 or 6 might be.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think modeling is also huge. Mm-hmm. I think that like the hardest situations that we've come up against in terms of giving advice is when the kids are picky, but parents are picky too. Because then like it becomes so easy to just everybody kind of stay in the lane. Mm-hmm. And that's fine too, by the way. There are plenty of picky eaters who have healthy bodies. And like, that's the point. We're just trying to, food helps us survive and, you know, be healthy. Yep. But it isn't the end all be all. You can be a really healthy eater and still get sick. And you mm-hmm. can eat foods that society deems really unhealthy and like exercise all the time and mm-hmm. live till you're like 95. Mm-hmm. There's no like fixed formula.
Right. Like where you get somebody who's like 97 and they ask, what's your secret? And there's yeah. like the little old lady that says 3 Dr. Peppers a day or something.
Yeah, totally. Or 3 whiskeys.
Yeah.
Or 3 packs of cigarettes.
By 10 a.m. Like,
huh? Oh, my God. What?
Hot dogs and potato chips.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So true. Well, ladies, where can my listeners find you to listen to more episodes or to find some of the courses and services you've talked about?
We are Didn't I Just Feed You everywhere, mostly. So didn'tijustfeedyou.com is the source for finding things like our community, like our course. There's a direct link if you go to didn'tijustfeedyou.com/meal planning for everyone to join the audio course. And Stacey mentioned /community is where you can find the community. We're at Didn't I Just Feed You on Instagram. We're on all of the podcast platforms that we know of. There are others, please send us an email.
Amazing. Well, thank you. I appreciate taking the time to share with parents. And I love the concept of the permission slips. I hope this episode was just one big permission slip for those overwhelmed, yes, frustrated yes. parents trying to just feed the littles the best they can.
It's hard work. We get it.
Welcome to another segment of Not Worth Your Money, where Carly and I'm Kyle, by the way. We're going to talk about if something is worth forking over the cash for. And today, I have one that we have definitely spent money on before, but in hindsight, was it worth it? And that thing is smart thermostats.
Whew. I'm intrigued by the definitely not worth it.
I didn't say that.
I thought you said...
We have definitely spent money.
Definitely spent money. I thought you said definitely not worth it. That's why I paused, because I was like, pretty sure you loved that.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I miss having a smart thermostat. We're in a rental right now that does not have one. We could put one in because we put one in our previous rental 2 houses ago, and then we just swapped them out.
So maybe that says something, that we haven't spent the money replacing.
Now there's 2 in this house, so we would have to get 2. This one. All right. So my thoughts on that are, 1, the reason I got it was because we got a rebate from our power supplier for buying a rebate. It was a Nest thermostat, and then you send in your receipt and get like $100 back. So I bought it on eBay so that we could get as much back proportionally as possible, because that's the way I roll. And then we left it for the new buyers when we sold our house. So yeah. Pros and cons. I mean, I feel like you've dealt with the thermostat more than I did in terms of installing and stuff. So what are your thoughts on value versus cost?
I liked it a lot from the sense that especially if we were traveling, mm-hmm. we could turn it off remotely. We could kind of monitor what the temperature was in our house. And then when we're, you know, several times when we like on our way back from a long trip, we had a long road trip on, I would turn on our thermostat. Mm-hmm. as we left, so that our house would be able to either warm up or cool down to mm-hmm. the right temperature by the time we got home, but it wasn't constantly running the whole time. So that was always really nice. The automatic scheduling stuff mm-hmm. was nice. I never found, and maybe this was just our specific thermostat or our specific house, but I never found that the smart learning features of like, let's make it run as efficiently as possible, I never found those to be super helpful. It was just annoying.
Yeah, we tried that a few times, and then we would find ourselves like roasting in the middle of the day or whatever. Because I think it was smart learning in terms of saving you money, not making you comfortable. Yeah. So it was like it was turning off at random times based on like with the weather or whatever. So we definitely did our own
programming for it. I mean, obviously the convenience of being able to turn it on as you're driving home. I also liked being able to be in bed and be like, it's a little bit cold in here. I'm going to bump it up a couple degrees, and you don't get up. You do it from your phone. You even like safety wise, you can get alarm notifications on your phone if the temperature goes like below a certain threshold. I also got like quarterly phone push notifications for replacing the air filters. We had a very basic Google Nest. We didn't have like the chrome looking one that was black. It was like the E.
It was the starter. It was the starter one. Yeah.
It was like the budget discount. Whenever, you know, I think
it was the least smart.
Well, I remember comparing the two of them. And one of the primary things it said as to a reason to buy the more expensive one was the way it looked. And I was just immediately like, well, we don't care. So, but I did like it very much. And we had it for over 5 years.
Yeah, I also took advantage of that same rebate program and the summer camp that I was running at the time. We replaced all of our thermostats with those things in our building. And so that was also really helpful. Mm-hmm. So I think they're definitely worth it. Mm-hmm. For asking if it's not worth your money, I think that it is. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of other smart home devices. We don't have too many of them. So again, maybe that answers the question of if it's worth your money or not for us. But of some of those other smart home devices that you're aware of, which are you at least interested in? Like, oh, yeah, if we got a rebate from somebody, mm-hmm. or we happened upon one, we might try it out.
So we own some cameras and safety or security things. We never actually set it up. So again, probably speaks to how highly
we got one, and then we didn't set it up, but then we got a different system that we used.
Just for cameras, though, not for like door alarms. That's and true. Security, yep. And all that kind of stuff. That do. We have the doorbell. It has a dead battery right now. We didn't replace. So like we have a very low priority for making these top notch functioning at all times kind of thing.
All right, I'll just list some, and then I want you to give me just up or down.
Just like yes, I would buy, no, I wouldn't.
Yeah. Smart refrigerator.
What does it do that my
It's got a screen on it so you can like have your shopping list. It has a camera so you can see what's inside without opening the door.
Oh, that's interesting. If I could do that remotely, then yes, because if I could be at the grocery store, like, do I have?
Then yes. Instead of texting me?
Or just buying seven of it. Yeah.
Smart garage door opener.
No, but I have never had an attached garage, so never had a garage door that was entry into our home. So I don't care about garage.
Smart lighting.
Yes. Like lighting, like dim lighting in the house at night and all that kind of stuff. So if I could like program that for like have an evening setting or something.
That you would just use all the time.
I would use all the time, yes. I want my house to always feel like there's a Christmas tree in the corner.
All times of year, all times of day.
No overhead lighting. Ban overhead lighting.
Smart sound system, smart speakers.
Like the little possessed Google that we have?
We have had it's old enough that it's gone through like several name changes with the newest product. So I don't even know what it's called now, but it's a little tiny speaker.
It was a Nest Mini, wasn't it? Or it was a Google Home Mini when we bought it.
That's what it was called, yes. It might still be called that, but I know it has changed names at least once. Mm-hmm. But it's old enough now. I think it's older than our oldest child.
Not our oldest child, but like we have a video of our second child as like a 1-year-old talking to it. Yes. It's at least 7 years old.
Yes. And it's gotten to the point now where you can say anything to it and it will say, sorry, there was a glitch. Like even before you're done. And it's almost not even worth having.
It's like someone who has gotten old and needs hearing aids. Like you have to go right up to it and be talking to it like 6 inches away and like the most clear enunciation, like, Google, turn a timer on.
It's going to do it right now.
Yeah. No, it doesn't listen to me. That's
true. I don't know what it is, but no smart device hears Carly's voice. And it's like the exact frequency that she talks at or the timbre of her voice or something. They literally don't hear what she says.
Like if I do voice to text, it has maybe a 60% accuracy. It'll listen to my kids better than it'll listen.
So if you work for Apple and you're listening to this and you want a test subject to improve your product, we can license Carly's voice. Yes.
Come figure out why it doesn't. Like, we have spent way too long. We've had, like, kids have gone to bed and we're having conversations. Spent just trying to isolate why is my voice not heard. And so we've done, like, we've had theories on, like, I think that the Google Home is programmed to cancel out its own voice so that it doesn't listen to itself and so that it doesn't have, you know, circular reasoning on giving itself commands. And maybe Carly's voice is the same as the Google Home's voice, so it's canceling Carly out.
So we've had her say, like, normal things to it, and then really? Talk like this.
Google, set a timer.
And it surprisingly works it does. Very well. So we love smart home devices, apparently.
So I'll take some of that back. I did like the Google Home device we had that had a screen I used to have in the kitchen. I put recipes on. Yeah, also was just like rotating pictures. I did like being able to see that and play my music from all that stuff that broke after we had it for a while though before it broke. So I do miss that. I could get rid of that Google that's in our dining room right now and never miss it again.
All right. Well, that is a lot of different smart home devices. And apparently we don't like most of them because we don't have a lot of them.
I'll try it if someone gives it to me.
Yeah. If you have a smart refrigerator that you want to just unload at our house, then take it.
Send our way.
Yeah.
P.O. Box.
All right. Well, this has been Not Worth Your Money with Kyle and Carly. And we will see you again next week on the Debt-Free Mom Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom Podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom Podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill, and is produced, edited, and mixed by Kyle Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.